What if your personal or business brand was so focused and so on target that it was easy for everyone in your organization to understand? What if you connected with your clients on an emotional level so deeply that they never forgot you? This is what the most successful brands in the world do. It's not about ad budgets. It's about developing a consistent brand, no matter the industry, location, or size of the company. Discover your brand and create an amazing, foolproof marketing strategy. This is the Brand Archetypes Podcast, hosted by Kevin Scarrett and Amy Zander, owners of BrandArchetypes.com. Join them on a journey to discover your most powerful, true brand.
Welcome back to the Brand Archetypes Podcast, everyone. This is Kevin Scarrett, and I am, as always, with Amy Zander. Amy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today. I'm excited to talk about the exciting industry of law and all things legal.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I fade out there for a little bit?
No, that's good.
I kind of just let everyone know my opinion of the legal industry. I think a lot of people have this opinion that it's kind of dry and boring, and you know, it's kind of like actuaries, you know, just fun stuff, don't
right.
you think? So, yeah, we're talking about the legal industry today. We've talked about healthcare. We've talked about food industry. But it's all about law stuff. Now, it's not just for attorneys or law firms. Any related products or services, you know, so I think paralegals or transcription services, legal secretaries, legal recruiters, inside the house, compliance services, document processing, archival. So anything having to do with law firms. They generally fall in the same bucket, but, you know, for the most people are going to be thinking about law firms.
Right? Bounty hunters.
Bounty hunters, right. <yeah. laughs> So if you're bail bondsman.
Right.
So if you're listening and you're not in the legal industry, we've said this before in our past industry review podcast. Hang in there. Keep listening. There are going to be things, points that we talk about that any company can adopt. So, Amy, we've already talked about law stuff when we interviewed our mutual contact, Sonia Marquardt. But what's your high-level view of this industry?
Yeah, so I found that branding companies in the legal industry can be a little bit difficult. They are generally steeped in tradition, highly professional. Many firms are family businesses with a long-standing matriarch or patriarch, things like that. So those traditions sometimes can be hard to break. If that's what they're looking to do, or sometimes the younger generation's looking to do that, and it can be difficult. And as we're going to talk about in a little bit, there's just some definite archetypes that this industry gravitates towards. So that's sometimes hard to overcome. But, you know, as we talked with Sonia, she does this really well. You know, she picked a different archetype and she's doing really well with it. And she grasped that whole concept of the brand archetype process, and she's a great example of an attorney that can break out of that tradition and do something different and still remain professional and trustworthy and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about alternatives to the traditional way of marketing law firms.
Yeah, okay. So not too surprisingly, when listeners hear you and I talk, I think just about every episode at some point in time, we make mention that the most important thing is to pick an archetype, to focus on one powerful focus, to idea, and that idea should be emotion-based, and the easiest way to do that is to go to brandarchetypes.com, check out the concept of archetype branding, get yourself an archetype, pick an archetype, and if you focus on that, we think that all things will go well in the future, but it is the most important thing for a firm in the legal industry to do as well, right? So got that out of the way. What else would you add?
Well, a challenge faced here that doesn't exist in a lot of other industries is the level of compliance restrictions. You might see this too in like fiduciaries and investment advisors too. But depending on how heavy-handed the compliance department is for any particular firm, your ability to have free rein with your messaging and marketing in general might be severely restricted. So that's not necessarily like a killer, and it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try, But it might slow your efforts down or make you have to be, you know, very pay very close attention. But lawyers are really good at that because they are versed in reading long documents. So if you ever want, you know, somebody to review something for you, anything, ask a lawyer because they don't miss anything. Right.
And if you want it to take forever, ask two lawyers.
Right. I have a friend that's a lawyer and she has a teenage daughter. And it's so funny because she's just like, keep going. I have all the patience in the world. I can sit down and do briefs for days. And I was like, ooh, that daughter is not going to win that argument.
Let me demonstrate.
Right. Okay. But a tip, though, for anybody in the law industry is to stand strong, know that this brand archetype process works, and to plow ahead and make ground where you can, and positive results will happen. And maybe those restrictions might loosen a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, for a small firm, you know, where the partners have a lot of sway and they can make arguments that the compliance department might be a little bit too heavy-handed, they will do that because, you know, they recognize the value of marketing without too many restrictions. But that's a tough road. It is always a tough road. And yes, with the investment advisors and, you know, anything with money or law seems to have the heavy-handedness.
Right.
So in past podcasts, we've talked about industries where, for some bizarre reason, the entire industry has gravitated to an almost identical brand strategy, in particular a single, very specific archetype. And the legal industry is one of those. So if you think about it, the vast majority of any product or service in the legal industry focuses on what we call the sage or guru archetype, you know, all about knowledge and wisdom experience. Now, if you are a law firm or anyone in the legal industry and you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, wow, that sucks to hear, if that's a bad thing, but this is actually a benefit to you because what it means is almost all of your competitors have pigeonholed themselves into a position of going head to head with each other. And the big opportunity for you is to choose not to do that, to take a different path, pick a completely different archetype. And by doing so, you will find that differentiating yourself is going to be a whole lot easier, differentiating yourself from your competitors. And because that's dramatically easier, your branding strategy is going to be a lot more powerful and your marketing is going to be a lot easier. So the concept of differentiation, differentiating yourself from your competitors is super important. So can't really say enough about that. It's probably the most significant impact of this approach to brand strategy is when you pick an archetype and you consider your competition, you are by doing that by itself, you're going to differentiate yourself and it just makes everything you do way easier. So like a lot of industries, the legal industry, it's kind of becoming a lot more commoditized. You know, LegalZoom and, you know, online services are taking away kind of the luster of the exclusivity of hiring a very expensive law firm, right? So as that process continues, as that trend progresses, differentiation for a lot of firms might actually become existential, meaning their whole survival might depend on their ability to do that well. So if you're in the industry, in the legal industry, and you're considering kind of a rebranding idea, a rebranding strategy, keep this in mind that differentiation is king and holy cow, why not pick a path that is just a lot easier than others, right? And, you know, kind of the ultimate doom and gloom would be that if you don't do that, and for firms that don't differentiate themselves, there's a chance that they could fail, and who wants that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That differentiation aspect to that is always important no matter what industry you're in. And I'm glad that you mentioned it again here. It's always good to remember that. Another concept that we absolutely have to cover here in the law industry is the concept of trust. So to what degree you believe it or not is not important, but most people agree that the legal industry does have trust issues. So what I mean by this is if you think about like ambulance chasers, and things like that, is this lawyer trustworthy? But to counter this perception is a typical law firm will focus on their experience and their expertise and their degrees and the years they've been in service with the hope that this deep level of knowledge will instill trust in their prospective clients. So with taking the guru, like as you said, is the archetype that this industry gravitates toward, that archetype is based on trust relative to experience. So it makes sense, you know, that they gravitate towards that. But there are opportunities here because there's a lot, there's several other archetypes that also have trust as a really important aspect of their brand. And so we have the neighbor, and that trust comes from comfort and familiarity. And additionally, this archetype allows you to effectively remove the fear of complexity and chaos and things like that. So
definitely a benefit.
Yeah. So the difference there is the guru would be trust based on experience and expertise, and then the neighbor would be because you know them, familiarity. And then the hero also has a lot of trust that comes with it because they're achieving. You know, you trust them because they you see results and they're achieving things and saving the day, kind of thing like that. And then there's the mother. Which is similar to the neighbor, where trust comes in from established level of comfort, and added to that is the powerful emotion of caring, nurturing, protection, and things like that. So there are other ways to establish trust in your brand without having to adopt the guru like everybody else is in your industry.
Right. So the next thing I would add beyond that would be, okay, so there's the idea that when you start this new process, you know, we give guidance to our customers as we are face-to-face walking them through the brand archetype selection and, you know, defining it and exploring the depths of their company so they can, you know, choose one that's appropriate to them. But certainly in those discussions, almost always, right up front, right in the early part of the conversation, we will ask them, so what is the view of the CEO, president, board of directors, you know, the pinnacle of your organization, whoever they may be, do they buy this? Are they aware that you're doing this? And the reason we ask that is nothing is more harsh than starting a process, putting in, you know, days or weeks or months into the thought, a well thought out strategy. And then having someone's personal opinion swoop in and say, "Nah, we're not going to do that. Do it that way. That's not how I think about it." Right?
Been there, done that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. You do that a handful of times, and you go, maybe I should ask that up front.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Who are the decision makers that we need to make sure are in the room? Yeah.
And will they freely exercise veto authority over what you're trying to do without a thought? And so, If that's even a remote chance, you kind of got to have to nip that in the bud, you know. So get buy-off from the top, right from the following. And with legal industry firms, it seems to be really an important point, which is kind of why I'm bringing it up. It seems like a lot of firm principals and partners for law firms, they kind of have strong personalities. They're, you know, alpha male kind of types, and nothing wrong with that. Hey, if I'm going to hire an attorney, I want them to be super aggressive.
Go-getter, yeah.
You have to, you know, not they have to be an alpha male, but you could also be an alpha female, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. But
type A.
Right. Be sure that you have buy-in
with
this before proceeding is really the point. Nothing's more frustrating than getting shot down, right?
Absolutely.
So what else would you add, Amy?
Well, as usual, I like to point out the importance of using the right words in the rollout of any brand strategy. So in the case of the legal industry, this happens to be even more important than most others for a couple of reasons. First, the legal industry professionals are usually hyper-focused on the nuances of word meaning. You know, that's part of law, right? And although this is great for legal clarity, it can serve up a death row blow to effective marketing communication. For example, how much more effective are pharmaceutical commercials that end with all those liability waivers, right? They have to have all that legalese in there. Considering the word legalese, the fact that that's a made up word, but people use it all the time to refer to legal jargon tends to be dry and boring and emotional free. But for a lot of legal reasons, it can't be ignored or eliminated. So, but, you know, that legal stuff is not what we're looking for in our brand and marketing message. And of course, if you adopt a more low key archetype like the mother or the neighbor or something like that, which is based on being really friendly, you don't want to throw a lot of jargon and industry terms and things like that at your clients that they're not going to understand. That could not be part of your brand. So even though you may have these legal words that you have to use, it's always good to explain them in the simplest way possible for us people that aren't lawyers and things like that.
And to be clear. If you are using the phrase may include side effects, including death.
Right.
In your marketing.
Yeah, you lost probably, me at death.
Yes. Right? You probably have a little bit too heavy hand from your legal team.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. So once you've established your new archetype other than the guru, you'll be pointed in the right direction. It'll be really important for you to review all of your different messaging, how the words you're using, how you're conveying your things. And all this messaging is included. The things that you talk to your prospective clients about, existing clients, employees, your marketing prospects, your commercials, your website content, you know, everything that has to do with words, either written or spoken, that the media, your clients, or the community will see and read.
Right. And it's, I think it's always an interesting process watching that. So one thing that's unexpected for our new customers is they go through the process and they in their heads, they think that rebranding is going to be just kind of confined to maybe massaging the logo a little bit, writing a tagline and, you know, redesigning the website a little bit. Maybe they don't think that it encompasses literally everything in business. And they certainly don't expect you to reconsider and review all of the words for all of everything that they do. So when they start looking at their, you know, brochures they've mailed out and their web copy and like, whoa, wow, yeah, they were right. This is in definite need of some refocusing and it's not as powerful as I thought it was when we originally wrote it. So yeah, that's good advice. So there is one last bit that I would throw in here before we wrap things up is there is a special word thing that happens in the legal industry that kind of drives me bananas. Why is it, do you think, Amy, that law firms feel compelled to name their companies with 18 partner names on the door? You know, why is that the industry is like, you know, Smith, 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 and Smith, right?
Right. It kind of, or do we cheat them and how?
Yeah, right.
It kind of goes back to that whole law being steeped in the tradition, and a lot of them are the family businesses and things like that. And I mean, from a brand standpoint and a marketing standpoint, it is much easier to remember Regent Law rather than Sonia Marquardt Lawyer, right? So she named her, even though she's currently a single lawyer, she named her firm Regent Law, which is so much easier. And and the other thing too is that, like, when you add a partner or somebody like that, you got to change your signs, you got to change your business card, you got, everything changes every time you name a partner, you know, add another partner, and that's expensive.
Yeah, and there is that tradition. I get that. And back in the day when there weren't really huge law firms, where it was all, you know, small partnerships. I get that, that the tradition carries forward into the future. I totally get that.
Right.
But why is it that no other industry does that? It's just kind of strange.
It is, yeah.
Or that they haven't figured it out in the last 100 years.
Right.
Know, or maybe 60 years, let's say. I think that so much has happened in the last half a century in the world of branding and marketing that the industry, all industries should have figured out the benefit of that one.
Right.
We're still there.
Yeah. I do think, I mean, there's a couple pretty large firms for this area in Lansing, and they have a single name. It's still a person's name, but it's one name. And then, you know, then as they add, you know, like the Zander firm or, you know, the Skerritt firm or something like that. And then that never changes, and then they can add and subtract partners.
You know, I just thought of another idea of another industry, actually, who has a very similar problem. In fact, there's an organization right there in the town where you live in, and it's a church. You know, so if you think of a typical church, it's going to be something something Baptist or something something Methodist or something something Catholic church. You know, so they kind of have generic religious kind of oriented names. No surprise. But there's a church right there on Bridge Street in downtown Grand Ledge is a church called Imagine LLC. Now, I think one of the challenges they faced was that a name like that is unexpected and their location was unexpected. And they were really trying to break away from a traditional church kind of structure and going after the younger crowd. But a lot of people just, they didn't know what they were. You know, it's like, Imagine, what is Imagine? And it didn't say church right in the name. And it wasn't a church name that they recognized. So I applaud them for the attempt, the confusion was pretty obvious with the local community. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they. I know the pastor there, and you're right. That was their thought process between tapping into the younger crowd or different people. And they're still small. I think they're growing, but I think it does work for them. I think it does help in the vision that they had for people mm-hmm. looking at it a little bit differently. And to me, it definitely makes it sound like it's going to be less traditional, more open, which is going to appeal to a lot of people. It's not going to appeal to a lot of people too, but that's okay. That's that they knew that going in.
Yeah, and we know a whole lot more examples of someone like Sonia in the legal industry choosing Regent Law versus churches who are trying to make that same shift away from the traditional way of naming themselves. So, you know, the whole world of religion has a long way to go on that point. Maybe the legal industry doesn't. So we wish them well. If you're starting a new firm, definitely one of the very first steps that you're going to consider in your brand strategy process is, what do we name ourselves? And holy cow, if you're listening to this and you haven't named your firm yet, take a deep dive into that process and consider taking a more contemporary, non-locked-in traditional path, because it will bring a lot more power to your brand.
And will save you money in the end without having to keep changing your signs.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. And
we all want that. So
yes, absolutely.
So give us a wrap-up, Amy.
Yeah, so if you, like Kevin said, if you're a newer law firm or thinking about opening one or have questions about the law industry, we'd love to talk to you about your alternatives to that traditional kind of marketing and branding that goes with the guru. And if you are an industry, any kind of industry, and you're thinking about being the guru or anything like that, we would just love to talk to you about your thoughts, the problems you're having, and answer any questions you have. You can get a hold of us at brandarchetypes.com and on all the social at brandarchetypes.
Sounds good. And we will talk to you next week, Amy.
All right. Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Brand Archetypes podcast. Are you ready to discover your company's archetype? Check out brandarchetypes.com, where you can download the book, find out about archetype-specific strategies, connect with us on social media, and sign up for our newsletter.